ZoneOneRadio.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Zone One Digest, the show that rehashes shows made by other more talented people and sponges off their popularity. I'm Stuart Hardy, resident Zone One Radio gremlin, and I'm here to be snarky and sarcastic about the week's content on Zone One Radio, the Mayor of London-funded community radio station for central London. I'm like this because someone fed me after midnight. So, yeah, this week, Zone One Radio made Mayor of London Boris Johnson its pimp, and he appeared on not one, but two shows for us. Well, almost. We got some pictures, so I call it one and a half shows, really, call it that. He opened a busking festival on the Underground, where he could fervently turn away the awaiting paparazzi. Naturally, London Life hosts Ian Hawkins and Ollie Hunter showed up to cover the event. Have a listen.
ZoneOneRadio.com.
Last week, we had Boris Johnson rocked by a eviscerating Eddie Mair interview.
Yeah.
And then we had his documentary going out the night after.
Mm.
And then, to make matters worse, he had to launch
a busking.
He had to launch a busking competition in front of a crowd of paparazzi. Who I'm not entirely sure were that interested in the busking competition.
No, there was a man that they shouted at who was in Lycra and videoing him, and didn't appreciate the niceties or didn't go along with the niceties of a press pack. Lined up and trying to keep themselves in order and trying to keep themselves as much as possible out of the photo. This just one bloke in Lycra decided to go in and film Johnson from about a yard away.
So, from the distance between your iPad and your face.
Yes. So it was like, I'll demonstrate. So it must have been like that.
I got shouted at as well because I wanted, as he was doing an interview for, I think it might have been BBC London, and he was doing an interview for that, and I was like, oh, this would be great if I could just get a clip of this. We'll play this clip as well because you can hear Boris just sort of fading in a bit, and then as this woman, as I get in the picture of this interview, this woman goes, F off, like that.
Well, that's BBC for you, they guard.
That's the BBC.
Yeah. The communist BBC, not the lovely capitalist free market Zone One Radio.
But at that busking launch, there was actually some reasonably nice people there.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
I followed a few of them on Twitter.
We spoke to Josh Osher.
Josh Osher.
Yeah.
How have you been involved with this?
I'm one of the champions, one of the ambassadors for the big bus gigs, so yeah.
It's cold, isn't it?
That's a word. Yeah, that's a word for it.
How is this weather for your voice?
I probably think that's the only rock star thing about me, that I don't really care kind of thing when it comes to, like, I don't really take that much.
Really? You don't have a rider which has, you know, honey and lemon in your Winnebago?
No, I try. Do you know what? I try, and I'll put it on there, and I rarely ever, like, use it. I'll just go straight in and sing.
Yeah. Gosh, you've got to insist on that kind of stuff. How long have you been singing?
Doing music. I've been doing it for, like, 7 years, since I was 14. Picked up guitar. And started making some noise on it, and connected with it, and ever since just kept expanding. So yeah.
And do you like busking, or are you looking for a way out of where's it going?
I've been I started off doing a lot of busking and gigging and stuff, and then signed to Island Records when I was 19.
Okay.
So I was there for about 3 years, and now just continuing to build on the foundations I've laid. Yeah.
What's the most exciting gig you've played?
Probably last year. I got Tom Jones invited me.
Wow.
To do a show, well, a few shows of him, but one of them was this special, me, him, C6 Steve and Tom Jones, and that was amazing last year, yeah.
And where can we find you?
You can find me online, yeah, like Facebook, Twitter, website, Google, you
what's,
know.
What's your website?
www.joshoshow.com.
Brilliant, Josh.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
I really want to give you my gloves, but I won't, because it's
No, I'm cool.
You got yours.
I'm like that.
Boris is so... He looks cool. I think we should go and just stick our hands on Boris and put ourselves on him. He looks... Snug.
Sorry, brother. Sorry. Nice to meet you, fellas.
Yeah, you too. Sorry.
I spoke to Natalie as well. She was lovely. She was only 14. I couldn't believe it. She was much taller.
What's your name?
As well.
Natalie Shea.
How did you get involved with today? And are you freezing? Because I'm cold.
I am freezing. last March, I think it was, I applied for the Mayor of London Games competition for 2012. And that basically involved me doing an audition to get into it. And then they gave me several venues to, like, busk in throughout the summer. I did 9 in total, I think, including Hyde Park, BT London Live, and, like, outside St. Paul's and Pottersville Park. And then there was also an online vote thing. So we'd give out a card when we were playing, and if they liked you, you can go online and vote. And I think a mixture between the votes and some judges, you got through to the final, which was held at Westfields in, I think it was the White City one. And then I was in the youth category because I'm 14. And then at the end of it, we basically played all day, and there were some judges, and I won the youth category.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Wow. And just out of interest, and I don't want to be so crass if you talk money, but is it quite a nice earner, busking, or is it?
I don't bust for money. I don't feel I need to yet, because I don't know, I'm still at school, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't really.
Okay, because you're not going to do this with your hat on the ground. Is this a quick way to not having to busk at all?
Yeah.
So how long have you been playing?
I've been playing classical guitar since I was about 4, and then on my 11th birthday I got a steel string guitar and I taught myself chords. I've been in musical theatre since I was about 4 as well. Okay. So I started writing songs and playing guitar from about 2-3 years ago. And it was only really in the summer where I started playing live. Like, I never really played live before. I played at, like, school, like local things, but.
And why have they forced you into this state of near undress? Why have they pushed you into a t-shirt?
Because it's a gig's t-shirt.
Some kind of, you know, that you think Boris would have sprung for a, I don't know, some kind of, what are those things that they put up?
A gazebo.
Some heating would have been nice. So where can people hear more and find out more?
I have a YouTube channel under Natalie Shay and SoundCloud, and I'm also on Twitter and Facebook under Natalie Shay.
Natalie Shay. How are you spelling Shay?
S-H-A-Y.
I don't know. It's an oral medium. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks, Natalie. It's great.
Thank you.
So, yeah, after speaking to Natalie, we listened to her play a song, and that was it. And, then we left. Because we didn't know what else to do.
We slipped off into the night. We tried to get Boris. We went out to try and find Boris's car because I said, let's hang around the car and we might be able to grab a quick interview. We couldn't. He didn't travel by car. Or if he did, the car was absent.
I think it circles around the place and then someone just goes like, Boris, it's ready. And then he sprints off, jumps into the back of the car, just like One Direction.
Yeah.
So. London Roy can be heard every week on Zone1Radio.com.
Zone1Radio.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Zone 1 Digest, the best of the week on Zone 1 Radio. And here on Zone 1 Digest, we like it when this station breaks new ground. And this week, our founder and presenter of motorsport show London GP, Matthew Layton, certainly broke new ground indeed. He went out and spoke to the new Nigerian team racing in this year's Formula 3. And this is going to be Zone 1 Radio's first interview conducted entirely in French. I actually attended this interview and sat there eating the free cakes and drinking the free booze at the event the interview was recorded at, and I was nodding and smiling. If you're like me, you'll appreciate the following clip in a similar way. So yeah, here's Matthew Layton, multilinguist and F3 fan. Have a listen.
Zone1Radio.com.
Good evening, how are you?
Very well, and yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very excited to hear that there are going to be a Nigerian team racing in Britain this year.
Oh, well, it's very exciting news indeed. I think it's great to have African team in such a high-class series.
Are you resident in Nigeria, or
no,
do you live over here?
I'm South African.
You're South African.
I spend most of the time, especially during season time, in Switzerland.
Yep.
And I'm usually in my off time, I'm back in Cape Town.
And your colleague here, sorry, I'm Matthew from Zone 1 Radio. Who the devil are you?
Small in French.
Yes.
It's not a problem.
Yeah, you can do it in French. Say, okay. Parle français.
Ouais,
on doit
yeah.
On doit parler en français.
Français, yeah, it's good.
C'est un petit peu difficile pour moi. C'est 20 ans depuis la dernière fois que j'ai parlé un peu français.
D'accord.
Alors, I don't know. What's it like to be driving in England?
A pleasure.
Pleasure.
African team.
An African team.
En français, si vous voulez. D'accord, en français.
C'est facile, j'ai
rencontré monsieur Adesso Kane suite à ce projet qui est venu à Paris pour me rencontrer. Donc, ça m'a tout de suite fait tilt parce que j'ai quitté le Cameroun à 14 ans pour venir en Europe,
oui.
Faire carrière dans le sport automobile.
Et vous êtes Nigérien ?
Non, Cameroun.
Cameroun.
Je suis né au Cameroun. Donc, ma passion déjà depuis tout petit, c'était de devenir pilote professionnel. Donc, j'ai évolué depuis mon enfance en France, en Allemagne, en Europe. J'ai fait des championnats. Et ce projet est vraiment excellent parce qu'il permet de montrer que les pilotes africains peuvent être très vite aussi, rapides, notamment mettre en avant aussi la première écurie.
Alors, qui est le meilleur entre les deux ?
Nous deux ? Who is the best ? You and me.
Nous avons des différents catégories, des différents essais.
Oui, it's complete. On se complète bien parce que Adrien, il a roulé dans beaucoup plus de voitures que moi.
Ouais.
Il a un peu plus d'expérience.
Mais vous êtes spécialiste.
Voilà, moi je suis un peu spécialiste en GT.
Ouais.
Lui, avec son expérience de monoplace, il va m'apporter un complément que moi je vais lui apporter en GT. Ce qui va nous permettre, je le souhaite, de faire un meilleur cocktail pour aller très vite, très très vite.
Et vous êtes les pilotes, les deux
leaders,
the best drivers in Africa.
Yes,
we have the best drivers in Africa driving us.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where is the man who made all this happen? Where is le chef? Where is he?
Hey,
le chef. Hey, monsieur. Venez ici, s'il vous plaît.
Come
on. English.
Yeah.
Stuart, you'll be glad to hear most of this interview's in French. It's going really well. Sir, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah.
Tell us who you work for and what you do.
I'm Ruby Adeshakan. I work for GRC Motorsport.
Yeah.
And we do motorsport.
So, how do you come to be competing in British GT?
It's been a journey for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm. So, the cars aren't that fast? It doesn't take 5 years?
No, it's not that fast. We've been through the ups and downs of, down of motorsport.
Mm-hmm.
All ideas started from A1 GP.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when we were about to put in our entry, that's when they crashed.
Yes.
So
it didn't survive the 2008 depression.
Yeah,
it
didn't survive. So it took us another 2-3 years trying to look at what's the best series we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we have to make sure that we are immune to anybody crashing.
Yeah.
Because we lost so much money with A1 GP. So
you're listening, when Benjamin's saying this evening we're trying to build a sustainable future, you're listening and going, we can be in there for a couple of years and get something out of this.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
So, and our intention is not just about racing alone. It's about also developing motorsport culture in Africa.
Yeah.
There's passion for it. Everybody likes fast cars.
Yeah.
Drive fast, very fast in Africa.
Yeah.
But most of them don't know GT Series exist.
Gentlemen, very good luck for this season. I look forward to seeing you at the front of the grid. And have a good time and good luck.
Excellent.
Cheers, man.
Thank you,
gents. It's great. Thank you. Zone1Radio.com.
London GP can be heard every week on Zone1Radio.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Zone 1 Digest is the show. Best of the week on Zone 1 Radio is the thing that we do on it. That was a very poorly phrased sentence if ever I heard one. I'm your host, Stuart Hardy, furry-faced gremlin of this humble station, and next up, technology on Tech Talk Fest, Zone 1 Radio's cyberpunk technology-based show. And this week, they had a look at numbers, specifically stats and web traffic and what you can learn about who's visiting a website, how long they're staying, and what you can learn from these glorious numbers like 12, 13, and 67. But not 102, though. 102 is just weird. Anyway, here's Tech Talk with the founder of Chartbeat, the company used by 80% of the top US publishers to get real-time analytics on their web traffic. Have a listen. This is Zone 1
Radio. You're listening to Tech Talk Fest with me, Zoe Cunningham. Every week, we talk to a key player in the UK technology scene. And this week, I caught up with Tony Hale, CEO of Chartbeat. So welcome to my guest, Tony Hale from Chartbeat. What does Chartbeat do?
So Chartbeat provides real-time analytics to some of the largest publishers in the world today. So your CNNs and your Guardians, for example. And we help frontline teams to adapt in real time to what the data is telling them.
Okay, so in simple words, you're providing a dashboard, is that right?
We're providing lots of different ways to consume it, but one of the most popular ways is a dashboard of data, which, for example, if you're the editor of the New York Times, you can see what stories are blowing up, where the traffic is coming from, and then you can start to act on that data to try and maximize both kind of traffic, but also engagement, the propensity for people to return.
And what, have you got any stories about the biggest impact of people using Chartbeat?
Sure, so you've got one of the most fascinating things for me is when you find out that what you think is important isn't the same as what your audience thinks is important. And sometimes you can underestimate that. And there was a large publisher in the US, a magazine publisher, and I was at their offices at the time, and there were two stories on Chartbeat that were blowing up. It was a story about French infanticide and another story about a possible second leak in the Gulf, both of which blowing up, and yet both of them buried below the fold on the homepage. Whereas the main story that they were pushing out with H1 headline and the big central image was a new season of Jersey Shore, and they completely underestimated their audience. And so that very second, they went and they changed, and they said, "Okay, we're going to be promoting these other stories that are actually more important and more interesting." So you see that happening all the time. And what the important thing about using Chartbeat is it's about lots of small tactical adaptations constantly versus huge big moves once every so often. And that's where you get advantage.
And this whole space of kind of analytics
is
getting quite crowded. There are quite a lot of players in it. Who are your competitors in terms of the kind of analytics that you do?
Part of the reason why we've been able to grow so fast is that the traditional market for analytics have been analysts. It's been people whose job it is to be a data scientist and to truly kind of understand data. And so what you'll find is the vast majority of analytics services, unsurprisingly, work for analysts. And what we found was that as companies were having to change to more complex environments, they were asking more people to make decisions, which meant more people needed data. They didn't have the tools to do so. So Chartbeat purely focuses on frontline people, on the people who can actually take action. And as a result of that, we actually have very little competition. When I say that, 80% of the top publishers in the US use us, I mean, that's quite the market penetration.
Isn't there a risk, though, if you're kind of pre-packaging up the data and giving it to people who don't understand about analytics, isn't there a risk that they're going to completely misuse this data because the reality is a bit more subtle than what they're seeing?
So two things that you have to do in this kind of thing is you're absolutely right. You can't just hand over data and expect someone to become a data scientist overnight. So actually what we have to do is the hard work of analysis on our end. So we have to present things, and sometimes in this kind of red light, green light, but to give clear signals. And one of the things that we chose to do was to specialize our product on certain verticals. And by doing that, we can understand what is the right goal for people in this kind of situation. And so we've been out. It certainly proves to be a greater challenge in terms of communication, but it's one that you can deal with by both kind of great data science and great design.
So you're not just doing a bunch of maths on some data and handing it on to people. You're making sure you understand the vertical,
yes. So
you know what information people will be trying to get out of the data, and then you can do that for them.
Exactly. My product development team spends the vast majority of their time out in the field, sitting in newsrooms, working with journalists. Because if we don't understand people and what their needs are, then we can't communicate to them. And that's the first challenge. It's not providing actionable data, it's getting people to look at it in the first place.
Tech Truck can be heard in the future at some point on zone1radio.com.
Zone1radio.com.
That's about all we have time for this week on Zone 1 Digest, the scraps of giblets and bones left by the more talented shows these bits came from. To end, more bojos in order, I think, as our esteemed fluffy-headed Mayor of London attended the launch of the Brasserie Blanc apprenticeship scheme, headed up by Raymond Blanc. This event is where that delightful picture of Boris eating posh food that's been floating around our Facebook page for a while now came from. Thanks for listening, and you can keep up to date with all the regular shows and other groovy things on zone1radio.com. That's zone1radio.com. That's all from me. Here's Bojo and Mr. Blanc.
We'll be talking to legendary chef Raymond Blanc at the launch of his apprenticeship scheme at Brasserie Blanc. But first, we asked Mayor of London Boris Johnson, who was also present at Brasserie Blanc that evening, how apprenticeships could help the London restaurant industry.
I think that what is being proposed is fantastic. I think that the restaurant sector in London is colossal and growing. You talk to Raymond, he'll tell you that London has changed out of all recognition in our lifetime, his and my lifetime. You're both far too young to remember, but British food was not famous. We now have, you know, huge numbers of Michelin-starred restaurants. I always say we have more Michelin-starred restaurants than Paris, but I'm told that's not true, so I have to stop saying that. We have about the most extraordinary diversity of cuisines you'll find anywhere on the planet. I mean, in a city where you've got 300 languages, you've got that many different styles of cooking, and it is really taking off. And this is a sector where young people can start very good, very well-paid careers with a real progression upwards. And talking to these guys this morning, they are very ambitious. They want to start off as maybe as waiters, become hotel managers, run big enterprises.
And how many apprentices are you looking to get through the scheme in the next few years?
We've already helped about 100,000 people, maybe more, I think, into apprenticeships since in the last sort of 2 years. That's a great effort. It's taken a huge amount of work, but we want to do more. We're not stopping there. We want to go up to 250,000 by 2016. We're really, London businesses are responding fantastically well. I congratulate Raymond, all his team on what they're doing. But we can do even more, and we're here to help. Please, if you can, publicise what I think is a wonderful campaign. All the businesses that do it say how much they benefit from the presence of these young people who are committed, who are determined, who want to know what a great chance this is, and who want to make their careers in these businesses. And apprenticeships increase the productivity, help the bottom line of the businesses that take them on.
There are just under 5,000 apprentices working in the capital's food industry, which has an annual turnover of around $17 billion a year. Raymond Blanc is the latest big name to back the initiative by taking on 21 new apprentices at Brasserie Blanc.
Today was about launching the first apprenticeship scheme in London, and the mayor not only launched his scheme with me, but he also cooked with me, and I made him chop a shallot. We did a salad lyonnaise, we did with all British best ingredients, whether the salad, the pork, the dressing, all the ingredients were British. Okay, so that was fun. The mayor didn't cut his fingers, which was good. His technique was a little bit dodgy. But on the other hand, he's a great mayor and he's creating a fantastic scheme, okay, of really making London even bigger, more dynamic. And God knows we need young apprentices. We need homegrown young apprentices rather than from all across the world. We need to recreate, reinvent our own regions, our own craft, okay? And I think it's amazing that this industry, for example, employs 300,000 people and create a £17 billion turnover. And this year, our aim with the mayor is to create 250,000 employment. So, of course, I beg my colleagues, my friends, whether you're a small restaurateur, you have a little cafe down the road, or a great hotel, please join the scheme. Please employ an apprentice. Your business will gain out of it. Plus, you will create an extraordinary dynamic, okay, in London. Success.
So can you tell me about the apprentice scheme that you have?
Oui, possiblement, obviously at Le Manoir Saison, we have our own apprenticeship scheme. We self-assess ourselves because we are trained to assess young people's progress. Actually, interestingly enough, I have probably the oldest apprentice with 47, who are trained as a very young man at 16 years of age, and local, with now my director of the Raymond Blanc Cuckoo School, and it's called Marc Peregrine. That is success. That's a lovely story, and I wish I could have more stories like that, and to have more local. At the Manoir should have at least 50% of local people. We don't. The same for Brasserie Blanc. That means to really grow young people in our business, everyone will gain. The employer will gain, the customer will gain, and of course the apprentice will grow into a hugely successful, confident worker.
In Good Taste can be heard every week on zone1radio.com.
Zone1radio.com.